A plan to fund the Homeland Security Department is the last one needed to cover the federal government for the rest of fiscal 2015. It is now taking shape in Congress. H.R. 240 is the subject of scrutiny from David Hawkins, the senior editor at Roll Call, and here to explain what he's seeing. David, thanks for coming on as always. Is this a continuing resolution, or is this an appropriated bill that goes line by line and looks at the needs of the Department of Homeland Security for the rest of the fiscal year?
It's definitely number two. It is the real deal. It is it actually makes the it picks up obviously five or where are we now almost 6 months late, but it now only five 4 months late. But it would rewrite the priorities or tinker with the priorities and the funding levels for each program and agency at DHS.
And what are the potential poison pills that are in there? I got a press release this afternoon from Mr. Benny Thompson, the ranking member of the House Homeland Security Committee, detailing some of the objections that he has. What are some of the Democrats on both the House and Senate side saying about what they may or may not like about this?
Well, there is one above all the others, or one topic that above all the others, which is immigration, and which is the Republican drive to add language to the bill. It's not in the bill at the moment, but by the time we get up in the morning, it will be ready to go onto the bill. And I should hasten to add that the House is going to take this up tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday, and then pass it by Wednesday night before going away for the weekend to go to some policy retreats. So what the main thing that Democrats are talking about and that the administration is talking about is language that would prescribe how the administration carries out the president's executive orders on immigration. So I think compared to that, any other poison pills that Benny Thompson sees pale by comparison.
As we progress through the discussions between Chairman Rogers and Chairman Mikulski, you and I spoke at times on almost a weekly basis about the negotiation that was going on back and forth behind the scenes to get to the deal that we eventually saw. Do we have a sense yet if any negotiations are going on about what could you live with, what could you not live with, either between Republicans and Democrats in the House as this comes to the floor and amendments get considered, or between the House and the Senate, or between Congress and the White House? Any discussions going on anywhere about coming to some kind of a compromise on this, or is this the third rail issue that Republicans decide that they're going to not step on?
No, I think to harken back to what we were talking about before the holidays, my understanding is that this bill the House is going to take up is, in almost every respect, embodies a full-fledged sort of handshake deal between the House side and the Senate side that they had a long shot aspirations, remember, back last fall, that they were going to get a full-fledged omnibus, in other words, all 12 bills.
Uh-huh.
So the staff was working on all 12 bills, and they were making some serious agreement on all 12 bills, including this one. And it was only relatively near the end of the process where the Homeland Security bill got peeled off and was told it had to wait until the new year so that they could have this debate on immigration that we're discussing. So, but for the immigration language, this bill is in pretty good shape in terms of a bipartisan and fancy word bicameral, i.e. House and Senate deal.
Does it make any difference, though, if House Republicans and Senate Republicans can make a deal if the president's just going to veto it when they send it to him?
In other words, it doesn't make any whatever deal-making that they have done to this point doesn't make a difference if they add this immigration language.
Right.
And the president has made that very clear. The House, and I think he's made it pretty clear to me. The big question now, of course, in Washington is, so first of all, we should remember that they've still got an enormously long amount of time to get this done. I mean, the CR that is currently governing Homeland Security doesn't expire till end of February, February 27th. That's, I guess, almost seven weeks from now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the this is the messaging point, a part of the debate. This is the sort of everybody can get their messaging yah-yahs out, and then we can get down to the real deal cutting, closer to the date. The big question politically is what has the terrorist attacks in Paris done to this debate. And at this point, each side is saying it's making their argument better. The Republicans are saying, the president better not hold this up over immigration. He's going to be under additional pressure to sign this bill with our immigration language on it. And the president and his Democratic friends are saying the Republicans are about to walk into the same trap that they've walked into 2 years ago and get blamed for a partial government shutdown over a petty dispute that they shouldn't have been waging in the first place. So we'll say, you know, the history would suggest that the Democrats are probably more right about this than the Republicans, that generally the president wins these kind of stare-down contests because he gets the bully pulpit and he's the one who sort of gets the last word in saying to the public, you know, they're acting petty and petulant, and I'm not going to let them. But there are still 7 weeks for this to play out.
Nice Rolling Stones reference, by the way, to get your yayas out. I like
that. You can't always get what you want in there, too. But I didn't.
Well, you don't want to push the references, I suppose. David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call. Is there a sense that maybe the reason they want to take this up right now instead of waiting till the last minute is this is part of the clear the decks effort, that they want to get this over with and get on with their lives?
Yes, I do think that's part of it. And I think that they, the leadership, realize that in order for that to happen, they need to have this sort of political theatrics. Even if they are going to cave in the end, or even if they're not going to cave in the end, they better not wait until the last minute to do it. So that's why they're moving this legislation now. It's also the case that the Senate, Senator McConnell has promised to debate this energy bill that they're taking up starting tonight officially and starting really tomorrow, the so-called Keystone Energy Bill, a bill that would order the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, but he's going to allow several days, maybe even several weeks of amendments on this bill to allow it to become sort of an energy catch-all bill, highly unusual in today's Senate, sort of a procedure, the open amendment, deliberative, greatest deliberative body stuff we haven't seen really for the last 2 years. He says he wants the Senate to run differently. He's going to let that debate run its course, even if that takes several weeks. What that means for the DHS funding bill is it's got to wait its turn, which means that even if the House passes its version by the end of this week, the Senate's not even going to take this up probably until at least the end of January.
I love that concept of several weeks of amendments on one bill. I think all of the folks that said the Senate should work the way that it used to, maybe we'll find out they should have been careful what they asked for, David.
Well, I think you're exactly right. Generally, new majority leaders, this happened, 20 years ago when Newt Gingrich became the speaker. He said that the House was going to work its will and we were going to have more open amendments process. They spent something like a month on the House floor debating a bill to regulate unfunded mandates. And then everybody in the House said, oh, that was crazy. Let's go back to having some getting it done faster. And then the same thing 4 years ago when the Republicans took over. People who pay attention to in the departments and agencies may remember a big mid-year funding bill that the House debated for something like 2 or 3 weeks. I think it was called H.R. 1, and it went on and on forever, and they got close to a government shutdown then. And then again, the Republicans said, well, we sort of scratched that itch of doing something forever, and that didn't really make much sense.
One final item. You are writing about some restlessness in the Democratic ranks in the House of Representatives in particular, about the way that they approach committee ranking member positions and subcommittee ranking member positions. What'd you find? What'd you write about today, David?
Well, there is, because the House Democrats have fewer seats than at any other time since the end of the 1920s, that, of course, means even fewer seats on committees. Because generally the party in power really sticks it to the minority party and keeps their committee seats very low or disproportionately low. So there are only a couple of good committee assignments for House Democrats to fill vacancies, and virtually all the ranking membership jobs have changed. It's part of this continuing story in which the power structure among the House Democrats has been stuck now, more or less, for several years. Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, the two top leaders, both in their 70s, both in their jobs for more than 10 years. Seniority has allowed lots of older, hidebound, safe seat Democrats to have the top jobs for a long time. And the pent-up demand is growing. In the last couple of days, I would note, Chris Van Hollen of Maryland has said on over the weekend that he might be interested in running for governor in 4 years. Javier Becerra, who is another top junior leader, young leader with ambitions to be speaker someday from Los Angeles, said he might not stick around and might run for the Senate in California instead. So there is, the pressure under the older more veteran leaders in the House Democratic side to yield some more plum assignments and leadership jobs is growing pretty intense.
And just a minute or so left, but that level of intensity, how high do you think that has to go before something actually happens? Because all of these people can be upset, but if the leadership doesn't want to get out of the way or create some spaces underneath them, and thereby trying to convince the people that have those jobs now to give them up, then none of this goes anywhere, and we just have this attrition that you alluded to, I suppose.
That's right, and I think for now, there's no reason to believe that the House Democrats won't have to wait until after the next election, the 2016 election, to figure this out. It's been pretty. It may be the case that if Mrs. Pelosi or Mr. Hoyer or Mr. Clyburn, who's the number three in the leadership, who's also in his 70s, decide to retire or relinquish their leadership posts, they will send that signal earlier rather than later, but potentially they'll keep running for the re-election and not announce this until after the next election, because they know that as soon as they announce they're giving up those leadership jobs, the pressure will be really off and they might be forced to do it sooner than their own timetable.